afternoon, and welcome to another Clearwater Jazz Holiday Foundation's Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. I'm your guest host today, Michael Cornodo, and I'm excited because today's educator is none other than Dr. Pete Carney, and the topic is understanding and applying bebop skills. So we have a special treat for you today. Just a reminder, you are muted when you come in. Thank you for joining us. If you have any questions, you can just use that raise your hand feature and type your question in the chat, and we'll make sure we reserve some time at the end so the educators can answer any questions. Don't forget, we hope you enjoyed today's topic, and if you have any suggestions, you can always email us at info@clearwaterjazz.com. You can also check out the free sessions that's coming up, and that's always posted at www.clearwaterjazz.com/education. And just before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. Don't forget to check out the studio archive of past video sessions at clearwaterjazz.com education outreach section. This is brought to you by Blue Water Wealth Management at Stewart Partners and Duke Energy. And don't forget about Young Lions podcast, available wherever you stream. And that's brought to you by our friends over there at Marine Max Clearwater. Just search Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions wherever you stream. Some of the past sessions that we've been fortunate enough to have Dr. Pete Carney with are, let me give you a list of them because they were great. Safer at Home, Advanced Improvisation with Simple Tech, Parts 1 through 3. Acid Jazz and Chili Hop, Music Production Techniques, Building a Good Solo, Improvisation Practice Methods. So there are great things in our archive by Dr. Carney that you can go back and check out. I had the privilege of listening to a couple of them, and I learned a lot myself. So just a little bit about Dr. Carney. He is the Director of Jazz Studies at State College of Florida in Bradenton. You know, recently his big band students took 8 out of 20 chairs in the All-State Band for State Colleges of Florida. He has previously given lectures on Radiohead and jazz at the National Jazz Conference and given a TED Talk on designing curiosity in music education. He has headlined as a saxophonist at jazz festivals, including the Rochester Jazz Festival and the Aberdeen Festival in Scotland with his acid jazz group, Orange Alert. His music textbook, Interactive Listening, was chosen by Apple as the editor's choice. And locally, he often hosts the jazz sessions at various locations. So, Dr. Carney, the stage is all yours.
All right. Thanks for having me back. I wanted to talk today about something a little more complicated. And sort of intimidating for musicians that have been improvising for a little while to try and make the transition to improvising over bebop. You know, bebop is just one of those things that gives people fits, absolute fits. Like, what is this? How do I do it? I want to do it so bad. And yet I stumble and I fall and I get beat up by it. And I still want to do it, so I keep coming back for more. That's how I felt about bebop. To me, it's really one of the most complicated technical forms of improvisation and musical communication in the world. I don't think there's anything more advanced than it, to be honest. I don't know anything that's harder than playing bebop. But I've been teaching it for a decade now, at least, and I feel like I've learned what I didn't know back then, you know? And I've learned what I want younger players to know now that can help you play bebop faster. One thing is that I came to the realization that it's two things. It's really basically two things. If I had to sum it up to a Martian from another planet, I would say it's scales and arpeggios. Just scales and arpeggios, especially on the instrument like the saxophone I have here. You can only play one note at a time, folks, right? You can only play one note. And then from there, you have a choice to repeat that note or go up a step or leap away from that note. That's basically it. You either move in steps or we leap. If you leap, you're kind of playing arpeggios. If you move in steps, you're probably playing a scale, right? And everybody knows that jazz involves a lot of scale work and all that. But the thing that we do wrong to some extent is how we practice the scales, I think, to get us to play jazz. And if I play this, I'm never going to play this in a solo. I'm never going to play that, and neither is Mozart, right? That's your straight scale straight up, and that's how we practice our scale, and that's how we kind of learned it for MPAs and for high school evaluation systems and all this stuff. But it doesn't help us be creative people, right? And I'm a firm believer that if you're going to be creative, you have to act creatively, right? We don't teach people to paint and make them paint by numbers for 20 years and then ask them to be creative, right? Yes, you can paint by numbers, but we know that's not really painting or coloring, right? It's just kind of getting you to start to imagine what painting would be like. When you take an art class, you don't paint by numbers. You look at a blank canvas and you start picking out colors and you start painting. I think it's the same for jazz. Like the way that we practice our scale, that usual way, doesn't help us be a creative person. So I started realizing and getting my students to practice their scales. I do this to myself. As far as bebop goes, why don't you practice your scales creatively instead of practicing your scales in that very formal way, waiting for that to make you creative? It doesn't happen, I guess would be my experience, okay? So the creativity has to be there. The creativity of bebop is this. It's very much scales or arpeggios, and it's very much scales from the chord tones. Yes, you can start the scale from other notes, but if you think about the main chord tones, the root of the chord, the root of the scale, the third of the chord scale, the fifth of the chord scale, or the seventh of the chord scale. If you look at people's solos on YouTube and look at transcriptions and it has a little chord symbol above it, and you look at the notes, you'll see that most of the times people are starting near or on the chord tone, most often on the chord tone. And if they start on a note that's not a chord tone, it's probably a pickup to the chord tone, right? Yes, there are exceptions, but that principle is really great for you to understand how to improvise. Like I said, with bebop, it's mostly chords or arpeggios or scales. So arpeggios. Right, those are all like just basic diatonic chords I'm playing. You can practice those on your own, just groups of thirds. And you can hear other people when you do this. You can hear Coltrane. You can hear him practicing, in a sense, his arpeggio sometimes, or playing the arpeggio down. Right? And that's just like going down the arpeggio and back up. So another way to think about it is just every other note of your scale, rather than trying to think of it as an arpeggio. It's just skipping every note. Those are mostly, yes, we can do arpeggios in fourths and fifths, but that's not the primary foundational logic of the language. It's even arpeggios, I would say, are a smaller percentage of what bebop really is. Bebop is really about running scales efficiently and turning around in the right place. And I started realizing through teaching, really, that you can play pretty good bebop. You can get younger players to play really well if you give them specific goals and specific rules, like start on your chord tone and turn around on a chord tone, and you start getting jazz pretty quickly. Let me show you, for example, if I take my G7, and I'll start on the third. I'm playing my scale up, and then I'm either going to go past the chord tone, or I'm going to turn around on it and come back down. Check it out. Right? Starts sounding like jazz pretty quickly because it's based on the same rules as J.S. Bach. Play me some money, you know, play me some chord tones, play me the stuff that belongs to the piano. Like whatever that piano player is playing, you're playing the same stuff that he is. You're not improvising in that way we think of it. We're improvising at the same time as the piano, and we're improvising in the same chord scale as the piano. Okay, so this little exercise is fantastic. And what I should explain for a second here too, like what is a bebop scale? There's a lot of different interpretations of that phrase. It can mean different things to different people. The basic concept is this: take your major scale and add an extra six to it. So if I was playing in G major, I would add the half step between the fifth and the sixth is there. So instead of G major sounding like this, that's my usual G major scale, a seven step scale, but because it's seven steps, it's not quite even rhythmically. We don't often play in seven. We play in bars of eighth notes in the bar, right? So we need an extra half step. The most common one for G major is to add that extra six. So I would add the E flat to the scale. And if you look at Charlie Parker solos, you can see this on paper. You know, you can see him playing the same way. It doesn't have to be the six. It just seems like we kind of like that the most. You can add that extra half step anywhere in the scale. Add an extra third of the scale. You could add an extra fourth, so you get to add the tritone to the scale. That kind of sounds cool, right? But I guess the key is that by adding the six, you kind of retain the sense of G major in some weird way. That E flat above the D is just a nice little half step transition. Okay. That's the basic concept of like a major bebop scale. If I see a major chord, I'm going to add an six to the scale. If I see a dominant chord, it's the most common bebop scale used, then I'm going to add an extra seventh to the dominant chord. I'm going to have, in a sense, both sevens in the scale. So if the dominant chord is G7, instead of just playing G, A, B, C, D, E, F, I'm going to add the F sharp to that group to make it an eight note scale. G, A, B, C, D, E, F, F sharp, G. That evens the scale. Again, my G7 scale starts like this. And I love playing with that too. It's not that you can't use the seven note scale, but adding that extra bebop note, it gives it this sort of jazz swagger story. It just, everything just starts to sit down the right way on the rhythm. Right? That's the beauty of bebop jazz, is the rhythmic, like, decisiveness of it. It's always eight notes. Compared to like modern stuff after that, if you look at like John Coltrane and Miles Davis in the, you know, the early 60s, they might go back to like a smaller group of notes, or explore four notes or five notes or six notes. But in this Charlie Parker phase, in the Dizzy Gillespie phase, it was in some ways about perfecting that eight note beat or eight note rhythm of a measure, getting, it was like trying to create the perfect jazz in a sense to me. And that's why that extra grouping became so popular. Eventually Coltrane and Miles are gonna kind of move away from that, but it is the foundation and it's everything you have to kind of explore to build a really good jazz vocabulary. Yes, we use quotations or somebody will play something they've heard or you'll cite another song and quote something from somewhere else, but that's not the foundation. The bread and butter of jazz is arpeggios, but primarily the bebop scale. It gives you the ability to play creatively without sort of worrying too much about the content. The other thing is the bebop scale, it doesn't function the same as the other scales to me. Like you can't use that 8-note scale for your arpeggios that I've found that for me personally, I'm sure somebody's done something great that I don't know about, but for me, that scale is really about running up and down the horn really fluidly and playing like really impressive slick lines that are just very polished and polished and just even. It's very even sounding, right? So I said, like for the dominant chord, you add both sevens to the scale. The third possibility is that I see a minor chord. In jazz, we primarily live off of what do I do on the minor chord? What do I do on the major chord, minor chord, and the dominant chord? All right. So we said on the dominant, add both sevens. On the major chord, add both sixes to the scale. And on the minor chord, you add an extra third to the scale. So if this was an A minor chord, which is the same as my G major, or I would add a C sharp to the scale to give me an extra half step instead of A minor like this. I'm going to add that extra C sharp to the scale. It's a small little thing, but I can tell you, I still work on this all the time. I still practice this all the time because you have to grab A flat minor instantly. You know, I can tell you that, I understand how to do that, but I feel like I've been on this for 10 years trying to really master this concept because it's still hard to grab. I still struggle trying to remember A flat minor bebop. It can be gone in 4 beats, 1, 2, 3, 4, it's gone. So trying to recall that is the real challenge. Conceptually, I teach it and I think students understand conceptually very quickly what this is about. If I see a dominant chord, play both sevens. If I see a major chord, add an extra six to the scale. If I see a minor chord, add an extra third to the scale, right? That extra half step, conceptually easy. To do it requires you to sit there and practice it. And I'll show you what I do to like reinforce this habit. Like going back to the beginning when I talked about practicing creatively to be a creative person, what does that sound like? How do I make my scales creative? The bebop concept makes that a lot of fun to practice, I think. The trick is to take your time and to work on one chord for 15 or 20 minutes. And explore that one chord scale through the whole horn, rather than sort of doing the concept and then going on to another key and practicing on another key. You really have to kind of dig in and say, I'm going to build my own ways to move around this scale. And let me kind of demonstrate a little bit here. I'm just going to work on my G7 for a minute. And I'm gonna go up and down and I'll speed it up as I go. So like I'm going from like years ago as a beginner to now, as a beginner and even still as a advanced player, I still practice it really slow to understand it, to feel it. All right, but I'm gonna play real slow and I'm gonna go up and down on my G7. I'll start on the root. I'll go up to the third of the chord, the fifth, the seventh through the scale. And when I get to the third, fifth, or the seventh, I have two choices, either to go through it or to come back down. All right, so on each note, each chord tone, and that's mostly where you want to turn around. You don't really want to turn around too much on the other notes. I find it's hard to make logical jazz out of that. It's not a rule for sure, but it's a practice. So it's kind of a fun game. You say, okay, I'm playing up and down the horn, and then I can go up through this chord tone, or I can turn around on it. But I don't want to turn around on the note above or below it. I just want to, it's a game of opening and closing doors, right? If I go up, do I want to keep going? You know, get up. So real slow. You have to do it slow to start seeing the chord tones in your head. All right, I'm thinking about I'm thinking about tonguing those upbeats. You know, it gives me a chance to really focus on the style of jazz, not just the concept, but stylistically, make sure you've got your articulation together. I'm tonguing the upbeats, but I'm trying to keep everything long. You know, my general rule of thumb, yelling at people while they solo is longer. Like play those notes long. If you can keep those notes long, you can play them short later. But the hard part of jazz is articulating the upbeats and keeping the notes long. If they get short, you get this sound. And they might be tonguing it the right way, but if you're not tonguing it, if your tongue is getting in the way of the air, then the notes start shortening up. And you get this sound if you're not blowing through the back of your tongue. And I don't care what instrument you're talking about. You gotta get your air has to come across your tonguing so it's not interfering with it. But if I'm tonguing the upbeats and I'm shortening up by accident, this is what happens. It's like so common. Everybody does this, and you have to figure out how to get there over your tongue. It sounds like this. Right? It doesn't sound like jazz exactly. That's because, it's not because I'm tonguing wrong, it's because the air is, I'm letting the air cut off on the downbeats that are not being tongued, right? Let me say that again, like the tonguing is right on, I'm tonguing the upbeats right, but I'm letting my tongue shorten the next note. And that's where you get that hokey kind of sound that you're trying to get rid of. So again, you don't want that. In jazz, you want to keep everything long, like I was saying. Right here, how it all just flows one note into the X, into the next. It's like one big air stream just pushing through the whole thing. Really hard to do. Easy for a teacher to say, hey, do this. And it takes about 10 years to be half decent at it. You know, I could say there's like a shortcut on the physical part of practicing, but there never has been. But conceptually, if you just kind of, again, write a note on the wall, I used to have pieces of paper on the practice room wall, or in my case, don't play short today, you know, record yourself and listen to it. Is that articulation working? It's a real good habit, but the other benefit again here of doing this slow is you can really hear whether the notes are long enough. And if that's not working, don't tongue at all and listen to your music. It works, right? Sounds good. I'm cool with what that sounds like. Now I want to put my tongue in back and not interrupt that nice, like, legato sound of jazz. Right? And the only way I got really better at playing jazz fast was again, slow practice, but also just focusing on one scale for a good 20 or 30 minutes or the day. You know, there became a point when I got really tired of being bad on E7. And so I just like spent a week or two really just practicing E7 by itself. And to me, what's better, to really attack a problem or to be decent at a bunch of different scales? I'd rather just kill E7 for a while, you know, because then you really learn how to approach the problems of the other scales. If you don't bury some of your enemies as an improviser, they will always haunt you. You don't want to be an improviser that always chokes when he sees A7 coming up, you know? And so I've had that happen. I was like, man, that's tomorrow. After this gig, I'm going home, and the next tomorrow I'm going to work on A7 because I'm so sick of that thing. You know, you have to address them at some point or another. You have to say, I'm going to just attack this one chord for sure. I don't, and they all have different problems. They don't play the same on the horn at all. You know, it's not, you shouldn't feel unusual about that. Like, it feels like I'm pretty good at D7 and then I'm not at E7. Like, and it shouldn't be that hard because they're very similar. C7 on the saxophone to me gives me fits still. It's still one of the worst because of the B and the B flat chromatic part of the bebop scale. It's just like right in the middle of the horn, and you got to use your side key and all these other excuses. So it's still one of the ones that gives me like a moment of hesitation that you have to kind of confront. So again, with the bebop concept, this thing is so useful. I would say in the last 20 years, just practicing up through my chord tones and turning around on different points, it's more important than most other things that I practice by far. So again, of course you're going to do other stuff and you're not going to play all your phrases long, but let's listen to that exercise and the benefits that it's created for me that have come from nothing else. Like, this ability to play bebop jazz has mostly come from me researching this one etude. So here's the benefit of what it sounds like when you work on it, and then it speeds up as you get better at it gradually. We're also going to be creative with it, right? I talked about practicing your scales creatively. Like, who said I can't improvise right now, right? Mostly just that concept. So through a couple little exceptions, but I would encourage you to think like that. So just the concept is simple, but think like that for a couple weeks where you say, today I'm going to work on the B flat seven, and I'm just going to explore moving up and down that staircase. Again, like C sharp seven gives me fits. Still gives me fits right now. Right now, I'm still confronting, like, I wish I had done something a little bit. I wish I felt that horn in my spirit, that key in my spirit, but I don't. And so I'm still facing that one, looking at that chord, like, what? Why can't we ever understand each other? And to me, that's the bottom line, is what I can do with this etude in a lot of ways. Wherever I'm at with that etude is really my feeling and my knowledge, my ability to play over C sharp seven in this case. This etude is the most revealing in terms of jazz, like bebop. You know, if I'm playing a pop tune, I'll go back to that seven note group for sure, right? You don't necessarily want to superimpose jazz all the time over your pop music gig or whatever. So, but this is like the most cut and dry. I can play over this chord or I can't. Yes, arpeggios are important, but I would say they're 20% of the story. 80% of the story is just this conceptual scale and battling with it. The other thing I would do is, I was just practicing rubato. I'll say, put on a track and jam with it. I'm just going on YouTube here, and this is called Jazz Drum Loop Medium Fast Swing. And after I've done it rubato, where I kind of warm up the physical like relationship with the scale, then I would put on this track and just focus on B flat seven or whatever chord it is. Doesn't matter. Give a little commercial action. Mostly just steps. It's most, once in a while, maybe I'll skip over a note, but most of the time I'm just kind of moving up and down the staircase, jumping down one note or two, but not really, not that often. Go up to B7. It's a lot more fun than practicing your scales and waiting for jazz to happen, right? I'm just picking one scale, B7 right now, and I'm saying, okay, B7, it's you and me, let's be creative. Right, and you start hearing people when you do this. You start hearing, oh, that sounded like Michael Brecker on this one tune. That sounded like Pat Metheny. That little lick sounded like Miles or Coltrane or whoever you like. You start realizing that jazz is like the practice sort of is the art form. You don't have to practice to then be creative. You can hear that people have their practice routine of certain scales became music, right? The practice of trying to be a musician is the journey that often becomes the artwork. Like Pat Metheny shows up and says, hey man, let's do this thing. It starts on B7. And that was just him practicing something, you know? That was him practicing with a track or a click or a metronome or something like that, and trying to be creative with one little group of notes. And that in this case, it's my V7. So that is the most important part of bebop is really focusing on an 8-note group of notes. Again, with the dominant chord, it's both 7s are in the scale. It's a major chord, both 6s are in the scale. It's a minor chord, you add an extra third to the scale. So you add the major third back into the scale. I think that's it. It's one of my favorite concepts. And if you stick with it as a young performer, you'll see progress within about a month. You'll see a totally different way of thinking about what improvisation is. It's not necessarily like playing all this fast, crazy stuff. It's really playing the scales and choosing where you turn around in it. So thanks for having me again. It's good to see everybody. And I hope everybody's still practicing.
Well, Dr. Carney, I'm glad we recorded this because I love sessions like this because you have to go back and listen to that again. Check that again, because there's so much information and you brought home about application and then the discipline of practicing this over and over and over again to make it music.
Right.
Sometimes right. I know we get into playing scales and techniques and we forget, we still have to play from our heart, you know, so
and that's right.
Hours. So thank you so much for sharing that. And I guess the question is, do you feel like some maybe young players that dive into this technique, do they get too caught up in the technique? Do they get stuck there? Or what would you recommend them to do to not get stuck on that technique? And to
stay- I think that's like the next conversation that comes after that. You know what I mean? The challenge for young people is that they don't necessarily have an audience enough to play in front of people. Because the audiences will quickly teach you to stop playing all those notes now. That's enough now. That's enough of that. But when you're young and it's different for young players because like anybody that can play that fast is king of the crop, right? So that's going to keep happening for a while until they get out into the real world, you know? So it's that balance. You can get hung up in the technique and you don't have the feeling. But I feel like if you practice this creatively in how you practice the scales, then it lends itself to you to continuously be creative. If your routine isn't creative, you're probably not being creative enough. You know, you also have to be listening to other albums and you have to read books and see hip movies that are about smart stuff. Like all that goes into being a real jazz musician is a vacuum cleaner of everything in society. That's, to me, that feeds your creativity. This is the workout, you know, this is the gym more than the football field. You know what I mean? This is the workout room. Yeah, you can't go out, you can bench press whatever in the gym, but you going out and playing the game of football, I'm sure is quite different from what I've heard.
Absolutely. And you know, yeah. so many people hear Dizzy and they hear Charlie Parker and they hear all the musicians during this great era and they're so intimidated to even attempt to try. Right. And I know during that era, you know, they intentionally wanted to be different as well, you know.
Right.
To pull away from just the monotonous of what was happening.
Oh, for sure.
Thank you for sharing this because it's almost like cracking the code. Now you see
that. Yeah, there is. There are. There's other stuff to do in bebop for sure. But this to me is like the great foundation that's underneath it all, you know, that holds it all together. Mm-hmm. You know, if you listen to Dizzy and Bird, you'll definitely hear that. Like you said, I mean, they were doing something different and they could quote everything around them in movies or whatever and all the famous composers around them. But the foundation of it is this like ability to practice your scales and like play through your scales like anywhere, you know. And to me, this is the most fun way, and my students love it too. They like this type of practicing jazz because they get it. They understand like what the goal is, you know. And then you start saying, okay, what can I add to it? But it's kind of like building the Christmas tree before you put all the ornaments on it, you know. you got to have like a really good foundation, and this will really get you there in terms of conceptual foundation material.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, another super fantastic session with Dr. Carney today. We really enjoyed this. And if you're listening to us, even on the playback, we recommend that you go out and tell other people all this great information that you're receiving here at Young Lions Jazz virtual sessions. We have so many musicians that come through and share so much knowledge. And whether you're a young musician or a seasoned musician, there's always things that we can learn about playing this awesome music we call jazz. And don't forget, check out our free sessions that's coming up. Go to the website, www.clearwaterjazz.com/education. And if you have any suggestions for future topics for our wonderful educators and professional musicians, just email us over there at info@clearwaterjazz.com. We want to thank everyone for coming out today, and we will see you on the next one. Keep on swinging.
Thank you for listening to Clearwater Jazz Holidays Young Lions Jazz Master Virtual Sessions. Thank you to our friends at Marine Max Clearwater for helping to present this podcast series. To learn more about the Clearwater Jazz Holiday Annual Festival tradition, other special events throughout the year, and our year-round education and outreach, please visit clearwaterjazz.com.